The date is April 12th, 2022. April showers have brought you another episode of The Other Side, the official podcast of the finest comedy club in all the land, the DC Improv. I'm your host, Chris White. We got an absolute banger of an episode today. Talking to Steve Byrne, an all-time DC Improv favorite, DC Improv podcast favorite for that matter. He's been on our podcast a bunch of times. Love talking to Steve. Also got a little teaser preview to get you excited for Pun DMV on May 4th. Yes, the DC Improv, in addition to hosting the greatest stand-up in the world, is also the preeminent location for pun competitions in the DC area. And that's some stiff competition, let me tell you. A lot of people vying for that title. Anyway, we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. But first, a little news. This week, the DC Improv is proud to host Jim Norton. If you are a hardcore stand-up fan, you probably first saw Jim on Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. Legendary show. Jim was one of the best panelists on that show. And he's got so many more credits. Oh, he's been all over the place. Specials on Epix, specials on Netflix, specials all over the place. He's on SiriusXM all the time. Jim, funny, opinionated, smart, dirty, clean, everything you want in a comedian. Jim Norton is one of the best examples of what you can do with club comedy. Just a great performer. Very excited to have him for five shows, April 14th through the 16th in our main showroom. And over in our lounge, well, you might think, hey, Chris, you did an interview with Marshall Brandon a few weeks ago. Isn't he in the lounge? No, he's not. Unfortunately, Marshall had to cancel on us. Marshall got a special invitation, an offer he could not refuse, to go open for Dave Chappelle in the middle of the country. So, on short notice, he had to cancel on us. But we have made a silk purse out of a sow's ear. We've got an incredible showcase happening. April 14th through the 16th in our lounge. Great five comic lineup. Ramin Mostafavi, Naomi Caravani, Matt Brown, D'Lo, and Justo. Great local talent. Basically rocking the stage all weekend long. Except for Easter, of course. Because everyone rests on Easter. Except for Jesus. He got up early. So, that said, go to dcimprov.com. Get your tickets. Check it out. But now, on to the main event. Oh my goodness. Steve Byrne has been a friend of the DC Improv for a long time. One of our favorite headliners. Also, a great guest on this podcast numerous times. There is almost nothing in the world of comedy that Steve hasn't done. I believe four specials, and I think he's getting ready to record his fifth. He's a director. He's directed an amazing documentary about stand-up comedy, the amazing Jonathan documentary. It's called Always Amazing. Fantastic documentary. You can watch that on YouTube. He made an incredible movie called The Opening Act, which is based on Steve's early years as a stand-up comedian. Also great. Stars Jimmy O. Yang, Cedric the Entertainer. All kinds of great stand-up comedians make cameos in it. Just a great film. If you're a fan of stand-up comedy, you really need to watch The Opening Act on streaming services. And hey, he's a podcaster extraordinaire as well. His latest project is something called Two Cool Moms with Joe Gatto of Impractical Jokers fame. We'll ask him a little bit about that. Steve is coming to headline our club May 5th through the 7th. Also, he is going to be part of our 30th anniversary celebration, the Goddamn Comedy Jam, June 27th at the 9:30 Club. He'll be rocking out, singing a song on the 9:30 Club stage as well. So we'll talk to him about all that stuff. Here he comes, one of my favorite guests, Steve Byrne.
I'm here to promote a new book, One Damn Thing After Another by William Barr. So,
you ghostwrote William Barr's book.
I ghostwrote this with him, yeah, over many steaks.
You're a man of many talents. Let's start there. We're now joined by the man of a million podcasts. It's Steve Byrne. Yeah. How you doing, Steve?
Good. Hopefully one of them will be successful. Maybe this is the one.
Maybe right? This is the one. Who knows? Yeah. I'm going to wager my money on not the other side, but a lot going on. Always a lot of irons in the fire whenever we're talking to Steve.
Yeah. Always, yeah.
Yeah. So how you been? I know last time we saw you was about a year ago. You were one of the first comedians to come back to the DC Improv after we had reopened, after being closed for more than a year.
Yeah.
So it'll be about a year in May when you're coming back to the club. How you been?
I've been doing very well. It's nice to see clubs opening up again. And again, that's one of those gigs where it was a moment in time where it's like, you know, we've all been in certain cities or certain situations, but to see the DC Improv like handicapped momentarily, you know, it was like, wow, it was surreal to see a room that was literally held at bay at 25%. And then the health inspector coming down with like a tape measure, making sure people were 6 feet away from each, like tables were 6 feet away. It was really surreal. So it was a crazy experience, but I'm glad I had gone out on the road to see certain clubs in those situations. And now to go back and see the pendulum swing, it'll be fun.
Well, that's one thing I want to ask you about. There's so many people with opinions about COVID and pandemic, blah, 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 online. You are someone who has actually traveled in the last few years, probably more the country and seen more places, more nooks and crannies around the world than almost anyone. You've had a perspective from all across the board. Steve, are we over this thing? You're getting the final word on this. Are we finally done?
I'll tell you, the red states are certainly over it. The red states were over it about a year and a half ago. But it's funny to see like Fauci, I think like yesterday said, this fall, it's kind of up to Americans to decide how to go about it. So that's interesting to see like even like this guy who was so prevalent over the last 2 years of our lives just going, you know what? I think he basically was saying, fuck it. All right. We tried. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens for sure. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I could go either way. I kind of feel like we live in here in DC. It's one of the more probably one of the more cautious places that you would have, you know, like in terms of they've been a little more slow going and easing things out of it. But I do feel like you kind of reach a point where there's another wave's going to come or another surge is going to come and people are just going to be like, nah, we're done.
I think so. Yeah.
I kind of think we're there. I don't know if it's because it's election season or I don't know if it's just because it's, you know, this is the fourth time around. I don't know what it is, but I really do feel like we've reached the point where even if it starts to go back up, people are just going to be like, oh, well, what are you going to do?
Right? Yeah. Yeah. I think there's certainly a fatigue factor that is set in with everybody. And I think that, I don't know, like I know people have gotten sick from it. I got sick from it. But even weathering the storm, I was like, okay, well, it was really, really bad for 48 hours. And then I was okay again. And I was like, if that's the worst of it, you know, of course, we all have friends or an acquaintance or somebody that's got somebody that's really, really sick. You want to be respectful to them. But at the same time, you know, if people have a choice between, you know, going out for trivia night at Hooters or, you know, being respectful to grandma, it's like, they're going to roll the dice. It's like, sorry, grandma, I got to see some titties. So
that's why I go to Hooters, trivia night. Really.
That's right. Yeah, fuck yeah.
I mean, you've been, like I said, I know you've been to Florida in the heart of it when it was like, you know, it just packed like nothing was going on. And then you've also been to, again, our club when it was like 50 people in the room.
Sure.
Was there any time that you've been traveling in the last few years that you've just been kind of like, I should not be here? Or have you been at the point where like, this is awesome, you know, where you've just...
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it happened. I uprooted my family from Los Angeles to Nashville, Tennessee. And we moved here like a year into like coming out of pandemic and COVID slowly, like, you know, people starting to come out of it. And I went to do a show and then was invited to Kid Rock's bar on Broadway. And this is like a Tuesday. And I just moved here from LA and I was like, holy, it's like 2017 here. If there was ever ground zero for the pandemic, it would be from Kid Rock's Honky Tonk Bar and Grill. Because it was packed. Nobody gave a shit. Nobody's wearing masks. And I'd come again from regimented California where it's really airtight there. So that was my first foray into understanding, holy shit, like this, there's another part of the country here. And then living in Nashville over the last year since that happened, I got to tell you, like, I was always like, well, there's got to be a spike at some point because I had that California mentality, right? And I was like, oh, there's got to be something. And then as I'm living my life and going out and going to restaurants and seeing people without masks and it not being part of their daily life, I was like, well, I guess it's okay. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but I felt more, there was more solace along the way knowing that I'm not hearing about the emergency rooms in Nashville, like going crazy because... The biggest thing that came out of the Kid Rock's Honky Tonk Bar and Grill is that somebody dropped a colostomy bag outside of the place, and that was the big thing. It was like, you guys are talking about that. Like, go inside. Like, this shit's crazy. And then I guess maybe it's not crazy, but I thought that was hilarious.
This shit's crazy. And the shit in the bag is also crazy.
That's right, yeah.
You know, you mentioned you moved your family to Nashville. Like, right, last time we talked to you about a year ago, that was about the time you had made the move. It's not a complete reverse Beverly Hillbillies because you don't, you know, you lived in LA, but you weren't, you're of Pittsburgh. You have a sign of a blue collar background as well.
Sure, yeah.
How's the family enjoying Tennessee?
the family's enjoying Tennessee. I think the biggest switch for us as parents were that we know now that our daughter's 9, she's going to be 10, and that she'll be exposed to meth instead of cocaine. So that's, it's a trade-off, right? But yeah, they, I mean, they took to it pretty quickly. They love it here. We love it here. It's great. And, you know, Tennessee, I think what's great about Tennessee, even going to like Zany's on Mondays when it's new material night, is that when you live in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, it's very, very blue. And even on the outskirts, it's extremely blue still. You got to go far ways away to you get some semblance of red, right?
Yeah.
But in Nashville, the city itself is blue. And the minute you go outside, like, yep, you know, the city limits, it's all red. And what's great is that there's this nice confluence of opinion where there's a respectability of understanding, okay, if you want to wear a mask, you wear a mask. Don't shit on me if I'm not going to, and vice versa. And for me, it was coming from, you know, especially New York and Los Angeles, it was really refreshing to see like an admission or kind of like a blasé faire about someone else's opinion, whereas opposed to like California, where, you know, everybody thinks this way. And if you're the one, it's like, get the fuck out of here. But it's like here, it's like, you just don't know what's going to happen or who's thinking what. So at the comedy clubs, especially, it's nice to see a blend between the two.
Yeah. You mentioned Zany's. Zany's, great comedy club in Nashville. If people have never been, been there forever. Is it still the Dorfman's running that? Is it still Brian?
Yes.
Yep. So just a guy who's been in comedy for forever and knows everything, knows everybody. And
yeah, the best.
Yeah.
Great stories from those guys, both of them.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the home base for a lot of people who kind of uprooted and kind of made it to where you are now. You're running at least one of your podcasts out of there, right? Aren't you doing a Comedy Pinata out of there?
Yeah, I do a Comedy Pinata. You know, look, you know the comedy space as well as I do.
Yeah.
And there's so many comics that sit around with microphones and there's no structure, but you're kind of like, you're becoming friends with these people, right? Listen to them for an hour. And I just thought, well, I don't want to do that. I want to do something different. So what we do is we get stand-up comedians to sit around at Zany's and we watch stand-up comedy together and we break down the bits and have stories about these individuals or appreciate or what we don't appreciate about the bit. So it's really like an honest breakdown of the material, not so much the performers.
Yeah.
Because I've seen movie podcasts where they break down stunts or movie podcasts where they break down special effects, but I've never seen comedians breaking down stand-up comedy. So I thought this would be a fun way to go into structure and educate not only myself, but comedy fans on, you know, stand-up comedy is not just stand-up comedy, right? I mean, there's crowd work, there's improv, there's roasting, there's storytelling, there's one-liners. So there's many different gears that comics can shift into. And some comics, as you learn, are one gear. Some are two or three. And I'm trying to be multifaceted via this education I'm even having doing this with everybody. So it's been a really, really fun thing to do. And, you know, we're not just sitting there judging other comics, because the deal is one of us is always on the hook at the end. One of our, the comics judging will have to judge our own bit in front of each other too. So,
yeah. So it's called Comedy Pinata. You can see the link on steveburnlive.com. That's your website,
yeah,
right? Yep. Yep. And the way you just phrased it, I think is very interesting that, you know, you're a student of comedy. You're working on, is it the fifth hour you're taping or the sixth?
I'm trying fifth to hour, yeah.
Fifth hour you're working on. That's going into production pretty soon, right?
Within the next few months, yeah.
Within
so
the next
I'm
few months,
coming right. out to work on stuff, yeah.
Right, right. So as you're doing this and you're sitting down with some of your peers and you're looking at some of these bits, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time, but some people feel you can always learn something. Is there something you've been, a conversation you've had doing Comedy Pinata that kind of like, oh my God, I hadn't thought of this, or something that you really feel like surprised you in these episodes that you've done so far?
I think the commonality is just understanding how deep some comics are willing to go to mine the bit, right? And that's something I really appreciated, is that there are bits that are on the surface level, right? It's just like, oh, that's fun. It was a quick observation, or it's a observation most of us can have. But to have an initial observation and you're digging and digging and digging and you're going to places that nobody's ever gone before. And really the bit is not even now about the surface of what was brought up, you're in a whole nother stratosphere of thinking. And I think that's the difference between people like, you know, Chappelle or Burr, where, or like Carlin or Pryor, where you go into depths that were never ventured before.
Yeah.
Because every comic's got airline bits. Every comic's got, you know, McDonald's bits. Every comic's got a, you know, my wife's this, my husband's this. But to like go so deep down your psyche and just shut it down and think about things. I always appreciated Mitch Hedberg. I'd heard years ago that he writes until he's exhausted the premise and there's nowhere else to go anymore. And that's why he was mining so deep to get that last line in. And it's like, that's the difference between, you know, talking about Mitch Hedberg today and not discussing countless other names, you know, myself included, because I'm trying to dig a little deeper myself with this stuff.
You know, it's one of those things where everyone kind of finds their own voice, but you can't. And in comedy, you're finding your own voice, but you're also always, to some extent, emulating the people that you love and admire. That's just kind of how it works. Is there someone that, as you're breaking down comedy, as you're, you know, trying to figure out how they approach a bit or how they wrote it, that really you feel like you're on a wavelength with this person, that you kind of admire what they do and you really try to study what they're trying to do?
I think, like, when you've done this so long, you kind of know your voice, right? But I think that when I was doing, like, I'm getting ready to film this new hour. And so I was like, if I'm going to do this, my hours have always done well, but they never had a major impact where it's produced a vast difference in ticket sales, as I'm sure.
No, Steve, Steve, perish the thought.
But I was like, if I'm going to do this, I've got to do something that stands out. So I'm doing a talk show, but I'm the only one on the talk show. Yeah. So talk shows start off with monologue jokes, then it's panel, then it's traditional stand-up, it's three styles of storytelling. As I was preparing to do this, I worked with a great comic named Argus Hamilton, who had, I think at one time, the record for most Tonight Show sets. And he helped me a lot crafting and working on the monologue sets. And when I was doing the monologue jokes, I went down a Carson rabbit hole, a Bob Hope rabbit hole, Dean Martin rabbit hole, because even in his variety show, he would do monologue jokes up top. And so what I found was I was immersing myself so much, almost like an actor would, you know, looking to impersonate somebody. I just started picking up these Bob Hope, Carson-esque, Dean Martin cadence. And the last few months I've been out and, you know, I don't really do meet and greets, but I've talked to a few people, stragglers after the show. And they're like, you have a very last weekend with some guy, you just said, you have a very like the nightclub performers of the 50s, you have that cadence. And I was like, oh, wow, that's really cool. That's a nice thing to hear.
One of my favorites, and obviously I'm a much lesser stand-up comedian than anyone you've mentioned, but I love listening to old Woody Allen. I know it's not taboo to say you enjoy Woody Allen, but his old stand-up, sure, where he would write, you can tell, I've seen interviews from him where he talked about writing bits backwards. They would take the conclusion and then kind of work the timeline backwards over and over and again, and then kind of construct it that way before he got to the start of the story. And when you listen to things like the moose joke, you know the famous moose joke, and it's like you can really kind of sort of, when you know how he kind of maybe approached it, it's like, it's fascinating. It's a great bit, but it's just like, it's kind of mind blowing how he put it together.
Yeah. It makes you appreciate the, you know, quote unquote, the art form a bit more, I guess, of it all. Right. Yeah. And just the way that, again, to the point of like, everybody's got different gears and everybody has different ways to cultivate the material. And the more I'm getting into this, the more I'm kind of learning about, like today we had Jessamay Peluso learning about her process.
Yeah. Girl Code and all sorts of other stuff she's been on. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Really, really. So that's been fun in terms of like, you know, because, you know, I mean, we're all hang out in the green room, we hang out at the bar afterwards, but to actually be kind of like forced to sit down and discuss our profession within the confines of certain bits. And the bits are always what's spurring conversation. So it's that in that regard, it's been a lot of fun. And like today we watch Whitney Cummings and I'm like, I love Whitney, but she's got to stop yelling.
We'll tag her when we post this.
Yeah, of course.
So you have another podcast as well that you've launched pretty recently. Another one that I near and dear to my heart. It's called Two Cool Moms, and it's you and Joe Gatto from Impractical Jokers fame. This is pretty new. It's like 6-7 episodes deep right now, right? That's where we're at.
Yeah, we just started it. I'm flying up to New York to bank some more episodes, but it's been a lot of fun. And Joe is somebody, I've gotten to know those guys over the years when Sullivan & Son premiered, their show premiered. So we were constantly at these Turner events together. And we always got to hang out with each other. And I really love all those guys. And then when Joe decided to step away, he was kind of bored. And we were just catching up. And I was like, look, if you ever want to work on something together, let me know. And we started thinking about what a podcast could be. And we both love being interactive. So what we do is we just, anybody that follows us on Instagram or Twitter, they write us their dilemmas, and you have two cool moms giving you maternal advice. That's right. So we're doing that. And there's been some like engineering hookups or whatever, like sometimes audio or whatever, but we're still figuring it all out. And I think by the time, we hit like 2025, we'll hit our stride and figure out the voice. But
it's a goal.
It's been fun, yeah.
It's not a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon.
The
name is Two Cool Moms. And you talk about it in the start of the first episode, you talk about the origin of it. But if you could just set it up for anyone who's interested in getting in this, why is it called Two Cool Moms?
It's called Two Cool Moms because Joe and I both have very strong-minded, opinionated mothers. And we always derived great advice from them. And so when we were thinking about this over the course of the years, he's given me advice, I've given him advice, and we were talking about the basis of where our opinions come from. We thought, hey, we've been perhaps given a gift from the maternal side of our family. Let's build off of that. So we're taking the gifts and the education that our moms gave us and sharing this gift with the masses, as opposed to being selfish and keeping this just to ourselves. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. Maternal advice aside, you have, of course, your fabulous mother, and then you've had the TV version of your mother that was on Sullivan and Son as well. But I want to ask, does your mom laugh at your jokes? I said when I was doing stand-up comedy, but like the number one audience I always wanted to please was my mom, because my mom, who I love to pieces, and I think in her heart thinks I'm funny, but was one of those people who would never give you the satisfaction of letting you laugh. If you got like the corner of her mouth up, like that was like, that was a huge triumph. And so it was, you're always trying to get your mom. She would never let you think you're too big. Did your mom laugh at your jokes?
I got to say, my folks were extremely supportive from the jump for me. Yeah. I mean, when I was starting off in New York City, I didn't know anybody. I just moved there and I got involved in stand-up, and my parents were my two bringers. As you know, you bring two bringers and you get 5 minutes on stage time, and they would sit through two and a half hours on a Saturday night watching horrendous comedy for five more minutes of really bad comedy from their son. But to see it all culminate and like, all the efforts not only I put in, but the fact that they were so supportive at the beginning and throughout the course of my career, they were always there for little band-aids or help along the way when I was starting off with, borrowing money or whatever it might be. And then to invite your parents to the Warner Brothers lot and see an actual sitcom and then a woman come out playing you and a Dan Loria playing my father. That was one of the kind of coolest moments for me to see it kind of all kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
And I'm glad both my folks were and are still around, but they were around to witness that. Because as you know, as you do this for a long time, some of our friends aren't as fortunate to have their parents see the fruits of all that labor.
Well, to case in point, Joe Gatto, whose parents have passed away. Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So. And he brings it up all the time. And he is very, he says some crazy stuff about it. Like, I guess something on Joker's where they were all talking about their parents and showing pictures, and then he showed a picture of just two skeletons for his parents.
Yeah, he brought.
He's got a great sense of humor about it. Yeah,
there's a famous. Yeah, it's one of those bits where he said, "Oh, my parents are coming," and he walked in with two those old Jackson 5 dance dummies. You know those ones. Yeah. He walks in with that rig where he's got a skeleton on each side. His mom and dad are here. Crazy. It's on my mind because we just had. James Murray was at the club over the weekend. We had him for two shows. And I really enjoyed the show. I really did. I know you've known them for a long time. So it's
sure
fascinating thing to me.
That dude could be one of the hardest working guys I've ever met
Murr?
In the entertainment industry. Murr.
Oh, yeah. He's
on a show that's been in 9 seasons. He could absolutely kick back and relax. And this guy works harder than me. And he has a show on the air, and he's got books and children's books. It's just like, my God, where does he find the time? He's bandwidth is amazing.
There's always those rare people where you're just like, I don't know. Like there's only 24 hours in a day. I'm not sure how they put this all together, that he's producing all this stuff and pitching stuff and just sort of always moving forward. It's just like, I admire it. And I'm also like, well, good luck with all that.
To see everything, you follow him on Instagram. It's almost exhausting and expiring at the same time. Like, how does he do it?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Speaking of inspiring stuff, in addition to you being at the DC Improv May 5th through the 7th, tickets available at dcimprov.com, you are part of an upcoming celebration of the DC Improv. You've been a great friend of the club over the years, really nice to us, and we've always loved having you. But we turn 30 this year, and on June 27th, we celebrate with a party at the 930 Club in Washington, D.C., very famous music venue called the Goddamn Comedy Jam. Comedians are going to hop on stage. We've got about 10 headliners, yourself included, hopping up on stage, telling stories, and then singing a song inspired by the stories. This is a show that plays comedy festivals and clubs, mostly clubs in LA and whatever, but festivals and big events. You've been a part of it before. Tell me about your first time doing the Goddamn Comedy Jam.
Well, I think it's a great question. And to anybody listening, this is one of the funnest comedic concert experiences you'll ever have. I'm telling you right now, it's so goddamn fun. So I heard about this show, and finally I was invited, and I was nervous because I don't sing. Most comics don't sing. So it's nice to be out of your comfort zone. It's like, okay, I'm on stage, but I'm doing something completely different. And I had the pins and needles, or I had the butterflies in the stomach like I did when I first started again. It was like, wow, this is kind of fun. This is exciting. And I proceeded to drink heavily that evening leading up to my moment in time. I did it. Josh Adam Myers, the great frontman for the band, is backing you up so it can help mix your voice so you don't sound as bad as you think you do. And it was, I'm telling you, one of the funnest times I've ever had on stage. And then after that, I was hooked, and they had me on that show at least, I don't know, like maybe 20 times since then. And he's always like, this is our MVP, and I'll keep it going until Josh is like, we got to stop, dude. Stop, please. But it's the best. It is so fun. And anybody that comes is going to have the best time.
Do you switch your song up every time, or do you do the same one every time?
Well, I've switched it up once or twice, but Josh is always like, man, let's do the one that we know works. So The one that works is Mr. Brightside by the Killers. It's
nice.
It's a communal song. Everybody knows it. There's got a lot of energy. The band loves playing it because it's fun to play. And as a comic, it's great to just like ride that wave and see everybody out there. Because even if you're familiar with the song, you know the song. And people just get into it. Like Tommy Your Life by Joe DeRosa is a song I never thought I'd ever hear him sing or at the goddamn comedy jam, but everybody knows it. And it became one of the funniest things I've ever been a part of. Cause it was like Joe DeRosa and, you know, myself and Ronnie Chang and John Rudnitsky, like this hodgepodge of weird guys. And we're screaming the song at the top of our lungs, like a song none of us love, but The crowd gives you fuel. You give the crowd fuel. It's a very interactive show. It is the best.
It strikes me as in your wheelhouse too, because if people have seen your stand-up set, you do a lot of great stand-up, but then sometimes your famous closer for a long time was Sausage Party, which is a very interactive thing that brings the crowd into it. That you're not. Right. It's not just you finishing out the show. It's people from the audience having a good time as well. So if there's something that kind of unifies the crowd that everyone's shouting along together, that strikes me as in the Steve Byrne wheelhouse right there.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm one of those comics that, you know, as much as I want to do and accomplish the task at hand, which is the material, there's also an element that I still harbor that I hope to always keep is that, you know, I still want to make sure the audience is entertained. I still want to make sure that they're having a great time and that they leave like at peaked, right? And so if I feel the show hasn't peaked, which on occasion it hasn't, I pull out Sausage Party, and that's always been the ace in the sleeve. It'll always take it over to another level. And so that's been a blast. But then this is like 10 Sausage Parties combined into one. And it just like, it all blows out at the end.
That's going on our poster, like 10 Sausage Parties combined into one.
That's right.
That's definitely how we're selling this from now on. I'm kind of curious. So when you're performing as a stand-up, you're a very accomplished stand-up. You know how to handle yourself on a stand-up stage. You know the cues. You know how to move around. Music performance is so different. I know I'm not a great karaoke singer, but when I'm standing there trying to figure out how do I rock out? I have no idea. Like I can sing a little bit, but I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know how to do whatever. How long does it take to sort of develop that and figure out how to sell something physically on stage as a singer?
I think as long as you're, it's just like stand-up, right? As long as you're having fun, the audience is going to have fun.
Yeah.
And I had a blast doing it. And it's funny because I did it at a different thing. See, when I was opening, the Practical Jokers asked me to open for them on this UK tour.
Yeah.
So I said,
yeah,
of course, yeah, I'll do that. But we're not in clubs. We're not in theaters. We're in arenas.
Like so O2, right? Arenas. Yeah, they're playing like the O2.
The O2 right. Arena, yeah. That's right. And so I did Sausage Party in the middle. And what I would do is I'd do some jokes. Then I'd do Sausage Party. I had to do 20 minutes. And then I would get off the stage at like the O2 Arena. And I'd walk all the way down to general seating on the other end. The spotlight would follow me. And I'd be back here on the floor. And I would say to people, I go, okay, we're going to choose between three songs. They're going to be up on the board. Two of them would be legit. One would be a joke, right? And they always chose Mr. Brightside. And the deal was, I said, by the time I get to the front of the stage, I want this place going fucking bananas. And so I would go through the crowd. I'd sing it with them. We had the lyrics up on the big screen. I'm chugging people's beer as they're singing it. I'd of course go back and get them another beer. But as I made my way up, I got on stage, and that's when the Jokers came out for that end chorus. And the place went crazy. And I remember telling my wife, I was like, I've never been a rock star. Every comic wants to feel like a rock star. Those shows, I truly felt like a rock star. Like, you're in front of 20,000 people. The place goes, the euphoria of seeing the people, they came to see the Jokers, they're going nuts. They're singing this song. It's anthematic. And it was one of the most like out of surreal body experiences I've ever had in my life. I'm still smiling about it now. Like, it's the one thing I've done where true bliss, joy, and happiness. And I can only imagine what like the actual killers feel like when they're singing Mr. Brightside and seeing, you know, people react that way. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'll be sure to tell your kids that was more blissful and joyful than their birth, but that's okay.
Or the wedding. Yeah, the wedding. Of course, yeah.
Let me ask you, just generically speaking, you said Mr. Brightside's a song you may or may not be doing this coming June 27th at the 9:30 Club for the goddamn Comedy Jam. What is Steve Byrne's music wheelhouse? So you strike me as, you're from Pittsburgh. I know you like hockey. I'm going to guess you've seen Styx live in concert at least once in your life, just based on that demographic. What's your first big rock show you ever went to? What's your favorite band?
Well, the first concert I ever went to, because again, I was in Pittsburgh, I went to Rat.
Nice.
Round and round.
You got it.
So
of Geico commercial fame. Yeah.
Very rock and roll metal kind of 80s, you know, band that was popular there. But as I got into college, that's where I discovered a lot of kids liked hip hop in college. A lot of kids like country and hip hop and all that. I always gravitated towards Oasis, The Verve, Radiohead, these Britpop kind of bands. And I still have a deep affection for standards. So I love listening to Dean Martin and Sinatra and Dinah Washington, Michael Bublé, Harry Connick Jr. Like, I still like these purveyors of the great American songbook. So I will go down rabbit holes. I love jazz. I have a lot of friends that are in jazz. So I'm kind of all across the board. I'll listen a bit of everything, but really, I mean, the go-to, if you were to ask me, it's probably Oasis and the Killers.
Oasis and the Killers, yeah.
How about you?
For me personally, my favorite musical artist in the pop side, I think, is Stevie Wonder. I have like every single Stevie Wonder.
We get album. It. You're not racist.
No, I'm very racist. Just not against black
people.
He's
the only one. Yeah. He's the only one I like.
The rest, yeah. No. I love Stevie Wonder. I always have someone just in college who's like, you should listen to the guy. He's like, he's full, you know. There was Stevie Wonder that I was listening to in the back of my mom's minivan when I was driving around in the 80s, which is like, you know, I just called to say I love you. And then she's like, no, go back and listen to the 70s stuff.
Oh, little
just
Stevie like, Wonder.
Well, be, even,
even
beyond.
Back in the day when he
early
was,
early 70s, when he kind of gets out of Barry Gordy's shackle, you know, starts doing his thing. And he came through DC and he did Songs in the Key of Life, which is an album album as old as I am. So it's 1976. And he did all of Songs in the Key of Life in a concert, double album. And the funniest part of the concert was, you know, he's of course blind, so, or is he, depending on what the internet says. but he does the whole show, and it's fun. It's mostly him sitting at the piano. They have lots of backup singers and all sorts of stuff. I think Erykah Badu came out and sang something with him and whatever.
Oh, wow.
But the end of the concert, he's doing, I forget what the final, one of the final song is, and at some point in the show, he gets up from the piano, and he's got like a low bench, and he stands on the bench. Just, it's got to be 2-3 feet off the ground. That's it. And he stands on the, no, he's fine. But the crowd goes apeshit like he just did a triple backflip, you know, because it's like a blind guy just standing on a bench. And they're like, this is amazing.
Please be careful, Stevie. Yeah. Oh, my God. Well, I mean, the concert must have been unbelievable to hear, especially such an iconic album.
Yeah.
Back to forward like that. That's
Who's your favorite thing? I mean, you said Oasis, all those guys, but is there a concert experience you had that was just like, this is my favorite concert experience? And outside of comedy, because you've seen a ton of comedy. But
I mean, I got to tell you, there was a Harry Connick Jr. Concert
great.
I went to where he was promoting NOLA after Hurricane Katrina. It was all the songs that were inspired by his time in New Orleans. And the last 30 minutes of that concert, these are songs that I know, right? Because I listen to the album so much, but they're not like, it's not like Bright Side. It's not like Don't Stop Believing. Yeah. It's not like something where it's communal, but he turned it into like a Mardi Gras celebration. And the band gets off and they're serpentining through the whole audience. Everybody's getting up. It's a communal, just like, it was just a lot of fun. It was a fun vibe in the air and everybody was kind of getting down and just ripping through it. It was great. Now, each one of the band members would do a solo and kind of take a victory lap. And you're like, fuck, that guy, Jerry, is great on the saxophone. Yeah. And it was just so fun to see. And it just builds and builds and builds. And you're like, when's this going to end? And Harry Connick Jr. is playing the drums. Then he's playing guitar. Then he's playing the trumpet. And it just blows off like a casket. And you leave there going, that was like the best show I've ever seen in my life. Because it wasn't just him. It was the connection he had. But him giving like every ounce of his talent out to us. And I'm sure he's doing that on a nightly basis. I just, as a performer, I appreciated it. But as a spectator, I was blown away at the showmanship of it all, too.
He's amazing. He was also really good in Independence Day. He was really good in that, too.
That's right.
Also, probably his greatest achievement. But that other thing you mentioned was also pretty good, too.
So. Yeah. How about you? Was Stevie one of the best?
Yeah, probably up there. Probably up there.
I mean, it's got to be.
Yeah, probably up there. I want to give you one last chance to plug something here. You are, of course, doing our show June 27th at the 9:30 Club. But you have your own edition of the Goddamn Comedy Jam happening in Pittsburgh. If anyone in Pittsburgh happens to be listening, you want to tell us a little bit about that show? It's coming up. Was that Memorial Day weekend or is it around then?
Friday, May 20th.
Okay. I'm not sure. Before the weekend. That's the weekend before.
Friday, May 20th. We're doing Sal Volcano, Roy Wood Jr., Haname Lee, Steve Renazzisi, Gary Cannon, myself. We're going to be doing the Goddamn Comedy Jam in Pittsburgh, and it's all to benefit the Mario Lemieux Foundation.
Nice.
My boyhood idol, hockey legend, and they do great work for cancer research and especially for children with cancer. So it all goes to a great cause, and we're going to put out this, Goddamn Comedy Jam. It's going to be an incredible show. We're doing two shows. The first one sold out. Yeah. The second one will get sold out.
And the first one sold out fast, too, right? It went, like, quick.
Within, like, days.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Not even weeks. So very excited about that. Any opportunity. I think I just want to get back to the O2 Arena at some point. That's what this is all about.
Working your way back someday. Yeah. I believe in you, Steve. I'll be there. I'll have a seat probably in the back. I don't make that much money, but you know, just remember you knew me back then. So
that's right.
Awesome. Steve, it's great to talk to you and really looking forward to seeing you, not just in May, but also in June. It should be a ton of fun. So
yes, we will have a great time. And folks, I'm telling you, you got to come to that 30th anniversary celebration. I'm telling you, you've been to comedy shows. You've been to rock and roll shows. You've never been to a show like this. Josh Adam Myers has it down to a science. It is the funnest time you'll ever have at a show. I promise you. It's so darn fun.
Excellent. Well, we'll take it. If Steve Byrne says it, that's good enough for me. I was kind of on the fence, but I guess I'll go.
Well, I'll also keep in mind that on Father's Day, my wife asked me where would I want to go for my favorite dinner. We went to McDonald's. So that tells you everything you need to know about me, okay? And that's the truth.
More than 1 billion serves, Steve. It can't be wrong.
That's right.
Come on, right? Clearly, they know how to satisfy people. So good enough. Steve, great to see you. We'll talk to you soon.
As always, thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it, Steve Byrne. Steve will be headlining our club May 5, 6, and 7. That is a Thursday through a Saturday, and go. It's always a good time. Steve knows how to send an audience home happy. And don't forget, Steve will also be at the Goddamn Comedy Jam, June 27th at the 9:30 Club, one of the awesome comedians in our amazing all-star lineup. He'll be rocking out and celebrating our 30th anniversary. And hey, he's been a big part of the last 30 years, so it's great to have him on that lineup as well. All your tickets and information are over at dcimprov.com. And if you want to find Steve online, search at Steve Byrne Live. That's Steve, S-T-E-V-E, B-Y-R-N-E, L-I-V-E, at Steve Byrne Live. That is his handle online. Now, the same week we have Steve Byrne, we also have one of our favorite events at the DC Improv. Every 3 months, the DC Improv hosts Pun DMV, the official pun competition of the Washington, D.C. area. Yeah, that's right. Some people say puns are the lowest form of humor. We say, bite me. It's awesome. It's just a ton of fun. where you get about 10 contestants preparing pun routines, showing up, doing their goofy wordplay at its very best. Audiences love it. And then there's also a fun little tournament at the end where anyone in attendance can hop on stage, try to make some awesome puns, and go home with a big prize if they win. It's an incredible event. It almost always sells out. Tickets are $6. It's so much fun, and it will be on May the 4th. Now, maybe you want some proof of concept. Well, we'll play that game. The host of Pun DMV is a comedian named Dana Flightman. She was actually a contestant in the first ever time we did a pun competition. She came to us afterwards and said, hey, I would think I'd be really good at hosting these things. One of the best decisions we ever made. Dana is fast on her feet, funny, smart, charming, and she kicks off every show with her own pun routine, which always gets the show going on an incredible high note. What I'm going to play for you right now is the audio from Dana's last routine. This is when we did Pun DMV in February 2022. Her theme, all puns based on condiments and sauces and things like that. Have a listen, enjoy, and immediately get your tickets for Pun DMV on May 4th.
So I want to say, first of all, I relish the opportunity to be up here. Because these days, even just dressing up and going out is a big deal. And granted, it's been hard. It's been chilly. And I would love if it was warmer, just to lay in the sun, to bask. Oh. How wonderful that would be. But you know, it's like my mom always said, you know, my mama laid that all out for me. She said, don't complain. And puns are my jam, so I know it's gonna be good. I wanna thank the contestants in advance because they mustered up the courage to get up here. I do wanna instruct them though, make sure you talk loud and clear into the microphone. In other words, don't mumbo. Yeah. You see, the DC people are. People, like, I've never heard of that. It's a sauce that shows I'm cool. So that's what that is, if you didn't know. Because we need to be able to hear you, right? Like, we had this one contestant, Kimberly. I was so excited to see her up here because, thank you. Oh, it was a slow burn. Okay. Slow like syrup itself. Meta pun, okay. I was excited to see her up here because I knew she was a really good author, like she's a paperback writer. And so she gets up here, she's doing great, but then she just starts speaking Dutch. And I was like, girl, my Holland days are behind me. I don't know what you're talking about. And then her friend's like, oh, that's just Horace, a thing she does. So I had to stop her, and I didn't want to eliminate Kimberly, but Kim, she had to go, you know? Makes sense. But the worst was we had this crazy night where, I mean, the improv staff's always great, but this night either no one was working the door or it was like the worst usher ever. Randos just wandered around the audience. I saw this group of two people holding up a third. I was like, is this weekend at Bernays? Then this guy comes in on a horse wearing a flapper dress, and I'm like, what? Look, I like a Marin era appropriate costume as much as the next guy. But that is not what we're here for. Then this priest comes in, so I try to be polite. I'm like, hey, holy guy. And at first he was like, peace be upon you. But then he just looked at me and was like, oh, Jew, and left. The worst, though, they let in my ex-boyfriend, and he's one of those guys who, like, at the time, he seemed like a wonderful guy. But it was a huge mistake. But, you know, hindsight's 2020. I think I was attracted to him. He had very masculine handwriting, like those real man A's, you know? But he was not a sexy guy. Like, he's the kind of guy when he comes around, women, you know, closed thighs, chutneys. I And he came in, he's like, oh, Dana, looks like you're still not pregnant. You don't have a kid yet, which is like super rude. And also I was like, yeah, dude, I don't want to have a kid. What do you think my insistence that you wore a condom? I don't want to get preggo. All right, that's enough from me. Are you guys ready for your first pun contestant?
There you have it. Dana Flightman. Dana will be hosting Pun DMV on May 4th at the DC Improv. Tickets are $6, only $6, and you get them at dcimprov.com. And hey, if you're feeling adventurous and you think you can actually step up to the pun plate, you can compete in the tournament event. All you got to do is sign up when you arrive at the club on May 4th. Get yourself a ticket, show up early, make sure you sign up. You can hop on stage and try to do some on-the-spot punning for glory and cash prizes, the most important part of all. These shows almost always sold out, so if you're interested in Pun DMV, go over to dcimprov.com, get your tickets now, and check it out. And with all that said, let's take this show home. Hey, our thanks to Steve Byrne for taking the time to call in. Our thanks to Dana Flightman for chipping in that clip of the pun stuff. Come out to the club May 4th through the 7th, whether it's for Pun DMV or for Steve Byrne. Come to the goddamn Comedy Jam. See Steve Byrne June 27th at the 9:30 Club. But you know what? However you're spending your life, we sincerely hope that you're getting in some laughs as well. Hey, thanks as always for listening, and we will hear you next time. See you next time. I don't know how this works. It's an audio medium. But anyhow, there will be a next time. We'll both be there on the other side. I'm Chris White.